Namaskar, this is Dattaveda Pragyananda, and welcome to DharmaCast. And today, the topic that we're going to talk about is called Knowledge, Action, and Devotion. In Sanskrit, that's knowledge is called jnana, and the action is called karma, and devotion is called bhakti. So what are these three concepts, and how do they relate to how we go about our life and how we go about our work or our movement on the spiritual path? So that's what we should look into. So the first item is called jnana, or knowledge. And knowledge there are many types of knowledge. I mean, we have mundane knowledge when you learn about the facts and the information about this world that's around us. So that's an important part of knowledge. But here we're talking about knowledge in the spiritual sense. And the knowledge in the spiritual sense, that's the most important kind of knowledge, is the knowledge of who we are, where we've come from, where we're going, and what is our role as a human being, what we have to do spiritually to develop ourselves. So this is jnana. And sometimes there's a whole field of it called jnana yogi, and people study it very much. There was one famous jnana yogi of the 20th century. His name is Ramana Maharishi, and he used to just teach people that you have to ask, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? So this is the role of knowledge, that we have to ask this question, who am I? Who am I? Who am I? But we shouldn't remain only in that stage, because that's not enough. It's not enough to make the question. We have to do more than make the question. And sometimes jnana yoga is often thought about as, well, you read a lot of books and then you will be a jnani. But that kind of jnana yoga is really not appropriate. Of course, one of the defects of study and acquiring degrees or just remaining in the books is that ego develops. Someone thinks, yes, I'm a great intellectual, I know a lot. So that intellect or knowledge is good as a platform, that you start the path and you say, what should I do, where should I go? And you use those questions to launch you on your spiritual movement. And that brings to the next item, which is called karma. Karma means action. We should do proper action. And what is the proper action that we should do in this world? So one action, of course, is like if you do good works, social service. And service here, which we've explained in some other podcasts, means the unilateral service of helping people and not expecting anything in return. So that's what is called service. So that's a type of karma. But the best kind of karma was actually explained by Krishna, you know, 3,500 years ago on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and it's now kept in some format in the different texts of Bhagavad Gita that we have that still exist. But what did Krishna say at that time? He said that we should do an action, but not create reactions. So even if you do a good work, you help somebody unilaterally, even you did that. But if you do it with ego, then you will get reaction from it. And the idea of yoga is to stop the chain of action and reaction. So the best actions, which was the yogis have pointed out, is an action which you will do, and you have the idea that the supreme entity, the supreme consciousness, is working through you. So this is actually karma yoga. So you can do your karma yoga in 24 hours in a day if you can remember that you are just an agent or just a means for the supreme entity, the supreme consciousness, to work through you. But I'll talk about that later. That's not so easy, because a lot of people say, yeah, okay, I'm just going to do, that sounds like the yoga for me. I just have to do my work in the world. I don't have to sit down. I don't have to meditate. I don't have to do any yoga postures. I don't have to do fasting. I don't have to do all these disciplines. I can just be a karma yogi. But I'm going to get back to that. But so that's one possibility. But the most effective way to become a yogi, and yogi means one who is united with that supreme consciousness, and the most effective way is called bhakti in Sanskrit, or devotion. So it's the path of devotion. But devotion exists in many different formats, many different styles in the world, and you'll see that all around you. There's some very crude kind of devotion where people will even pray, oh Lord, kill my enemy. So this is called the static devotion. It's the lowest kind of devotion. And it's really not a devotion at all, because you're really not thinking of the love that you have for the Supreme Entity, but you're thinking about what the Supreme Entity can do for you. And the worst thing he can do is to kill your enemy. But that's a very faulty approach. And if you look at it logically, why should the Supreme Entity take your side in your dispute? Because he's also the Supreme Entity for all the people. So if you pray that, oh Lord, let my football team win and not the other, why should the God take your side in this petty matter? So it's not really devotion. But still, you know, people do have that kind of prayer. And then there is another kind of prayer or devotion, which is kind of, you can call it spiritual materialism. People will pray, Lord, you're perfect, but you forgot one thing. You forgot my red sports car. So can you please deliver it for me? And there are some people who think that if you pray hard enough, you think hard enough about something, then it will manifest for you. But that's also not really devotion, because you're focused on the material item that you want and not on the supreme entity who's going to deliver it for you. So that's not really a devotion. Then there is some people who pray and they don't want anything bad to happen to anybody. They don't want anything physical to be delivered to them, but they just want, they say, oh Lord, I'm old, please release me from my burden, give me peace, or something like that. So then they're not asking for anything bad, they're not asking for anything physical, but they're also not asking for the Lord. They're not asking for it to become one with the Supreme Entity. So that's not really the devotion, but we call it sentient devotion, in the sense that it's not static and it's not mutative, but it's not really the highest form of devotion. So what do we mean by devotion, at least in the spiritual sense, is that we want to give pleasure to the Supreme Entity. We want to please that Supreme Entity. And that is the path towards unification, because it's a path of love. So when you love somebody, like just in the mundane world, you're thinking of that person. You're thinking of your nearest and dearest one, and you want to, and ideally you want to please that one. So that's what spiritual devotion is. But there are different, even when we reach that level of spiritual devotion, there are different forms that it takes. So one form of it is when we say, oh God, I want to be with you, and I do that because I get pleasure. It makes me happy. I don't want anything from you, but I just to love you makes me happy. That's why I love you. So that's one approach. And then what we call the highest approach, non-attributional spiritual devotion, is when somebody says, oh Lord, I love you because you get pleasure. I do my spiritual practice to please you, not to please me. So that's really the the highest stage of devotion. But the question will come when you first begin your spiritual practice. You don't feel that. We do our spiritual practice, especially at the beginning stage, at very different levels than what the yogi he is talking about. And I'm referencing the work of my guru, Sri Sri Anandamurti, because he's the one who taught me about the different stages of devotion. So how do we get to that stage? Because, see, we have to get to it sooner or later if we want to get to complete merger in the Supreme One. Because, you know, many people, especially beginners, when they get on the path and they read about enlightenment and samadhi and satori and all these states, they say, yeah, I want that thing. I want that. I want that. And people think about the goal even before they understand how to do the practice. But if we want that thing, think about it. If you really want to become one with the Supreme Entity, with the Paramapurusha, with the Supreme Consciousness, then that has to become the main focus of your life. It has to become what you're thinking about, what your whole mind is directed to. All our energies have to go into one point and then unify. So that is not an easy task. And as I began in the beginning of the lecture, I talked about knowledge. So it starts, we listen to a lecture or we open up a book. So we have to go on the path of knowledge. So that's very important. But we can't remain. If you remain in the book, it's just like if you had a book on how to assemble something and then you only went reading the book and you never tried to assemble it. So you would remain in the book. And then I talked about action, that we should do karma yoga, we should do proper action. So there are different kinds of action you can do in this world. You do business where you will give something and get something. Or you can do service. In service, that's the best kind of action for a yogi, is where you will serve somebody. And also the highest is kind of service is you don't expect anything in return. And you're thinking that the person you are serving is an expression of God. And you are thinking that even when you're doing this noble action, you're thinking that even you're not even doing that action. You're thinking that this action is being done through you by that Supreme Consciousness. And if you can do action like that, you don't acquire any kind of reaction in the future. Because, you know, that's what the yogis are always talking about. The Buddhists talked about get off the cycle of birth and rebirth. But you can't get off that cycle until there are no more reactions left to come your way. So whether they be good reactions or bad reactions, we don't want to create those reactions. So this is the proper karma yoga, that we should do our actions and not create new ones, and we should serve the creation, we should serve the manifested beings, recognizing that they're just an expression of God. So now that seems like, wow, that's an easy way to do it. But what I talked about before, I hinted at, it's not so easy. The reason why it's not so easy, it's because when we get out we can read about this, like in the knowledge phase, and then we can make a vow. Yes, now that's what I'm going to do. 24 hours a day, I'm going to do this karma yoga. Just like Krishna talked about, I will do it. But the thing is, we forget very easily. We go out in the street, something happens, you forget the Supreme Consciousness, and you remember, oh yeah, I forgot to bring my briefcase, and now I have to go all the way back, and you get all down. No. So we can't just remain with a vow that I'm going to do karma yoga. So that is what the role of meditation is all about here in this phase especially, that when you sit down in the morning, you should remember who you are and what you're supposed to do in this world. And when you meditate, that you are connected with the Supreme Consciousness. That's what meditation is, at least the kind that I practice in any case, that you're meditating, that on your relationship with the Supreme Consciousness. So what happens? When you do this kind of a practice, then even when you open your eyes, you go out in the world and you do your daily work, you will remember more and more that, oh yeah, this thing which is coming, I'm picking up this hammer, it's really an expression of the Supreme Consciousness. This person who's coming to meet me, I will greet him or her as a, because God has come in her form, in his form. And if, then you will be practicing karma yoga. But if you don't do some really strong practice, you're going to forget about it. You can't practice karma yoga 24 hours a day unless you have a firm spiritual base. So that's why I really emphasize that you need some practice. You need some spiritual practice, some intuitional practice, some meditative practice. And then, of course, to support, you can't meditate if your body is not cooperating with you. Your stomach hurts, your chest hurts, your back hurts, your knees hurt, everything's hurting. So that's what yoga postures are all about. Yoga, that's one of the factors. Yoga postures will help to keep your body in good shape. If you're always catching a cold, always getting sick, always getting a headache, you can't meditate. So we have to also, in addition to this, learning some spiritual practice, we have to learn how to take care of this body. Because the body is our vehicle. If the vehicle is faulty, then you can't enjoy the finer things of life. So we have to take care of it. And take care of it means not to stuff it with pills or to you know, get surgery every year to fix the different problems, but keep it in shape naturally by eating properly, by doing the proper asana, even learning how to do fasting. So many different things are there. So you see that we wanted to take the easy way out, just I'll just do good actions. Very good. It's a noble idea. But unless it's supported by a spiritual practice which will remind you, and physical practices which will keep you in the proper shape so that you can do the spiritual practice, so that you can do the good and noble works that you want to do. Without that, it will be very difficult. And then we come to what the yogis call bhakti or devotion. And already in the world, you know, people are practicing different forms of it. Some are on a very crude form. They're praying to God, asking for different kind of things. Some are bad things they're asking, to kill people or to eliminate the enemy. Some are, they're not as bad as that, but still they're greedy kind of things. Just that people are asking for this and that, which is like asking just for toys. And not, one example that my guru gave, he said, suppose there is a little baby and he wants the attention of the mother and he cries, and if the mother gives him a toy and he gets satisfied only with the toy, then the mother will leave him and just go about her duties. So we don't want the toys. So this red sports car and all these things, they're just toys. They're not the real thing. So we should pine not for the toys but for the Supreme One. So that's what real devotion is all about. That when we really, really want one thing, to be one with the Supreme Consciousness, and when we have that undying, burning love, then we will get that all these different states of consciousness that people have written about, samadhi and satori and whatever name you want to give it, you will get it. But only when you want it. But if you don't want it, you're not going to get it. You get what you want. I mean, we go in the direction of what we want. So if we want material things, we're going to go in that direction. We may or may not get it all that we want, but we're going to go there. But if one day comes that you get a little bit tired with the different things of this world and you want something a little bit more, then you will go in that direction and one day you will get it. Now the question is, when will we get it? And what is the stage of that? So what I think about devotion is that it awakens in you in a certain time. It takes time to get it. When you begin meditation, you may not have that kind of feeling. And of course, many of us, in fact, myself included, we began meditation to get some mundane benefits, as to lose some stress, get more self-confidence. These are great things, to increase memory. Nothing wrong with this. So do meditation on that level. But then, as you do more and more meditation, what happens? This devotional feeling will awaken in you without much effort on your part. Because as you do more, you will feel, wait a minute, there is some presence around me. There is some presence that's with me. There's something that's guiding me. And you will get it. Sooner or later, that devotion will awaken in you. But if you want to awaken it faster, my guru, Sri Sri Anandamurti, gave a formula how to awaken it. What he said was, karma, which is action, minus jnana, which is knowledge, equals devotion. So, karma minus jnana equals bhakti. How does that work? It's like this. If you do a lot of selfless work, and the kind where you're not trading things, you know, for money, but you're giving, helping the needy people, helping people with the expression, with the idea that their God has come in human form, you're serving them. If you do a lot of this kind of service, and it exceeds the amount of your study and your intellectual work, the surplus portion is bhakti. And why is that? Because knowledge has to do with the ego. Yeah, I know this, I know that, I know so many things. So that's your ego. But when you do service, you're forgetting about yourself. You're forgetting about yourself. And I'll give you an experiment that you can do after to prove this. But as you forget about yourself, you're doing this karma yoga in a proper way. And if you do more and more of this, and it exceeds the amount of your ego knowledge, then that devotion is going to awaken in you. And so what the experiment I meant was that, you know, when we meditate, you'll find there are obstacles. And the biggest obstacle is what? We're thinking about ourselves. Oh, I have to do this, I have to do that. This person said this to me, that person said that to me, and me, and I. And this is what is getting in the way of meditation. So when you can suspend that kind of thinking, then you will enjoy your meditation more. And one experiment that you can make is do some service, do some work where you're not going to get anything in return. Help some people, help the needy, help the poor, and spend some time in it. Then you will sit down for your meditation. And what I've experienced when I get involved in different kind of projects to help others, and I'm not thinking of my own needs, then when I'm finished with that, I do my meditation, I enjoy it, and I feel that, yes, I can really feel something spiritual, something divine. And that's what we want. That feeling of devotion will come when you will feel that I'm not alone in this world, that the force that guides the stars, it's guiding me, that there's someone loving me, that love is showering on me. So this is the phase of devotion will come. But as I said, and that it won't come if we remain in the knowledge phase, and especially in a phase of, if that knowledge is building our ego. If knowledge is helping us to move on the spiritual path, then it's good. But if it's retarding us and we're remaining only there, then it can be something detrimental or something which is not conducive. So this is knowledge, action, and devotion. Get a little bit of knowledge, what you have to do, and then action, do some action, serving all the beings, created living creatures of this universe, with the idea that they are, God has come in their form. If we do this kind of karma yoga, this kind of service, and then what will happen? That devotion will awaken. And in its highest form, devotion is that even we just do it. We're doing our meditation. We came to do meditation. We want to increase our memory, and we wanted to increase our attention span. We wanted to lose our headache. Now we say, I want to please the one that I love. And who do I love? That supreme consciousness, the supreme one, the highest one, the one who is the most loving entity of this universe. The love that is actually our true self. Now, who is our true self? Is that supreme love. And when we're lost in this kind of feeling, the mind becomes suspended and there is only love. Only love remains. So that's what bhakti yoga is. Just when only love remains, the mind gets suspended. And that's what the yogis and all the great teachers were trying to explain to people. But people, because they get engrossed in their petty matters, they never reach that stage. So there is a path to reach it. Get a little bit of knowledge, do the proper action, do lots of that proper action, do some spiritual practice which will help you to keep the knowledge in your mind and let it continue and continue until the love grows so much that nothing else remains. So this is the path of yoga. This is the path of bhakti yoga, the path of the yoga of love. And it begins, of course, with karma and jnana, these parts, but it ends in love. So that's what I wanted to say today, and I hope that this is something valuable for you, and I hope that you will tune in again and listen to us on our next podcast. Namaskar. I salute the divinity within you with all the divine charms of my mind and all the love and cordiality of my heart.